Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mondays with Matty Wood. I am your host, Matthew Davis, and today is Monday, April 3rd, and I am joined with a very special guest today. Some of you, or most of you, may know him on Twitter at DraftCheat. His real name, though, is Peter Christensen. He is one of my favorite people on Twitter and in the fantasy community. He works at Run Pure Sports, and you can find him on the DFS streets and in NFBC. Pete, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Waking up with Draft Cheat certainly applies. 6 a.m. here in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Loyal listener of the show. You and Vlad do a fantastic job. Certainly this show is a fun one Monday mornings, and honored to be joining you this morning.
Yes, I am very excited to have you. You and I have kept in touch since, I think you and I actually became, I would call it friends, during the pandemic. We first came across each other in 2019, and then in 2020, you and I thought it would be a genius idea to create our own little sort of projection system when we thought that the 2020 Major League Baseball season could have potentially been played in the spring training facilities in Florida, man, and Arizona. And so you and I got a little aggressive, built some OC teams, and then they all got crumbled because they were swiped away.
Yeah, that was a genius plan. I think I'll give myself credit. I think I was the one that kind of came up with it. But the premise of the idea, remember, there was just chaos. That was obviously the beginning of the pandemic, and we didn't know if we were going to have a season, how many games it would be, where the games would be played. Pretty much everything was up in the air. But one of the initial proposals was that they were going to like split up the two leagues. Half the teams would play in the Cactus League in Arizona. Half would play, obviously, in Florida in the Grapefruit League. And if you look at like the spring training totals, the over-unders, the Cactus League games are way higher scoring. It's like an average of, I don't know what it was, I think it was between 2 and 3 runs per game. So our plan was to draft all pitchers from the teams that we thought would be in the Grapefruit League in Florida, and all the hitters. You know, it's like having all your hitters from Coors Field and all your pitchers from, you know, San Francisco or whatever. And I think we did draft a couple teams, right? And like an OC or two, but then,
3 of them,
those teams just got straight up canceled, right? They just like got our money refunded or whatever. But if they would have gone through with that plan, I'm pretty sure it would have worked. And then there was really no downside to it, right? Like even if we had to play those teams through and they didn't do the plan, we would just kind of have a normal distribution of players anyway. So yeah, one of those, light bulb moments. Didn't come to fruition, but still proud of the idea.
Yeah, I definitely got to give the credit to you, and I was certainly buying into it. So then when we started working on things,
I tried to push the idea to like 3 or 4 people, and everyone else besides you was like, you're crazy, man. That's not going to work. And you were like, yeah, I'm fucking in.
Okay, so you're over at Run Pure Sports, and you're doing DFF stuff over there, and I know that you get to work with our friend Big T, so you guys are having some fun over there. That's cool. Have you been playing MLB DFS, obviously, this first weekend?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind of the first 4 days, for sure, with DFS. Been on shows and doing content, core plays. I put up pretty much my entire player pool for the subscribers over at Run Pure Sports, obviously in the Discord, all that stuff, and then managing NFBC teams, trying to keep up with everything, right? It's not just enough to like, it's like once the games start, you're like kind of back to the grindstone, trying to figure out the next day, trying to stay ahead of it all. Certainly these early days of the season are, I think can be extremely profitable. I've had some of my best months early on, kind of before all the data gets there, right? You get to July and August, and at that point, you kind of know who these players are. The prices for DFS get to where they should be for the most part. But early on, there's all kinds of misprices. So it's almost a matter of kind of narrowing it down among the players you think have value. So it was a good first week of DFS for sure. I do kind of like these first couple turns through the rotation. I feel like I've got a good read coming out of spring training, doing NFBC and all that stuff, of which pitchers are ready and prime to go, prime to start off well. And then, of course, once we get like the data from the first couple starts, that's helpful too. So really fun time of year, but certainly a busy one.
for me, now that I live in Chicago, having the DraftKings Sportsbook app or FanDuel or whatever app, MGM, Caesars, et cetera, the strikeout props, I've become quite fond of them. And I think one of the big things is obviously the K minus BB rate, or just the strikeout rate, swing and miss stuff, O swing, et cetera, for the pitcher, right? Skills. But that aside, for the first start or the second start, you kind of need to know where these guys are stretched out at. So looking at the metrics and then adding on how far or how deep I think a pitcher can go, and then just pounding the over or potentially even the under. You know, you and I discussed Madison Bumgarner as for the under on 4.5 strikeouts, which just seemed, it was like the same in line with Zach Eflin against the Tigers. And so these books definitely aren't focusing as much as they are on the lines or, you know, on some of those things early on in the prop. So I've been having a little bit of fun with those.
Yeah, it's good to bet those. Those are profitable. And you got to make sure to mix in, you know, betting the normal lines or SGPs a little bit. Keep your account nice and clean so you can keep hitting those props. And I've seen you had you've been texting me some good success on the same game parlays over these this first weekend. So good work on that. And yeah, strikeout props, certainly a fun way to do it.
There was three games left, I think, on the Saturday night slate, and you and I kind of were intrigued with the Dodgers game and the Padres game, and you're like, well, tell me what's going on and what do you like? And I was asking you what you like, and all of a sudden I sent you 10 picks out, which you didn't even respond to, because obviously that's a bit egregious. And they all ended up hitting, thankful to a Juan Soto eighth inning garbage time base hit up the middle. All right, let's get into some news and notes for fantasy baseball or just real life, just anything in general, just news notes. First one is the aforementioned Madison Bumgarner. He's being sent back to Arizona. He mentioned that he did have some fatigue. He qualified for a terrible outing. There are a couple of pitchers that are intriguing to fantasy baseball managers, and that would for the youth movement in Arizona, and that's Brandon Pfaadt and Dre Jameson. Do you have any idea if Bumgarner misses time? Who do you think gets that spot, and are you interested in either of them?
I feel like he should just miss all the time and be like DFA'd at this point. I don't know what the point of, I feel like there's almost, I don't know, like baseball is a strange sport. You do see players kind of have bounce back seasons, resurrect their careers. I feel like Bumgarner is pretty cooked at this point, to be honest. So I don't know what you have fatigue after the first start. I mean, we've been picking on this guy in DFS for years now. Arizona, they've got an exciting young team. And they do have guys waiting in the wings, right? So I would assume he's going to miss at least a couple starts if he's headed back to the facility or whatever, already saying his arm is fatigued. And he might not be long for this team, to be honest. So the guy that I'm rooting for, and I guess think is number one in line, is Brandon Pfaadt. I actually have a couple tickets on him to win Rookie of the Year at 60 and 65-1. He led all of minor leagues in innings last year in 2022, I think in strikeouts as well. I mean, everything I've read, the data I've looked at, great stuff, good command, throw strikes, obviously can go deep into games. I did see he gave up 500 runs in his first spring train or minor league start rather, but I think he had 7 or 8 Ks, and I think he pitches in Reno, Nevada, which is one of the worst places to pitch. So I'm pretty high on Brandon Pfaadt. I hope he's the guy. It's always hard to predict who they actually will go with. Obviously, you know, service time and all that stuff does come into play still, but I think it'll be not too long before Brandon Pfaadt gets a chance. I did draft him on a couple online championships, and I don't hold minor league players or injured players. I'm pretty aggressive getting rid of those guys, keeping a flexible roster, but he is one of the guys, along with Vaughn Grisham, who I was also surprised was sent down, that I did end up holding on to. You know, you never know how long you can hold on to those guys, right? If you get a roster crunch, you get a bunch of injuries, you get guys you can't drop. Yeah, maybe you have to let them go. But for now, Brandon Pfaadt was a guy I held on to, so I'll be rooting for him. I do think he's got some pretty big potential if he does get the call for the Diamondbacks.
He was added in just a few main events in the NFBC because he was pretty much universally owned. So his roster percentage now is at a full 100%, whereas Dre Jameson's is 85%. And then in the OC, Fox is actually 64% compared to Jameson's at 21. So the industry itself, or the community, or whatever you want to call it, is sort of in line with that as well. I don't have any, but you mentioning, you know, how deep he was going last season, with a little bit of strikeout upside. Those are kind of two of the things that would intrigue me as a young pitcher coming into the big leagues. Let's move on to some more crappy news. Johnny Brito, he was phenomenal in his major league debut for the New York Yankees, going five innings against the San Francisco Giants, only giving up two hits with one walk, striking out six, zero earned runs. He gets the W, becomes enamoring for us in the NFBC or in fantasy baseball to add last night. And then fortunately for me, I didn't end up getting any with my bids were at 2% and 3% in the main event for Brito. But he went for a little bit more than that. And then he was optioned. So people obviously that added him pretty much missed the news. And it seems like he was pretty much added. Let me check his percentage now. It's 96%. So maybe a couple of leagues figured it out as a whole and kind of scaled back or just didn't add him in general. But 96%, now he's being sent down. What do you do if you added him?
Good question. I assume they're going to go with a four guys. I assume they have enough off days. It's tough in the beginning of the year. Even trying to predict two start pitchers for some of the four and five starters. Some of the guys starting today, honestly, it's hard to know if they're going to get that Sunday start, right? With the day off in the middle of the week for most of these teams. Obviously, if you added them, I mean, hopefully you've got another option to plug in your nine pitcher spots in NFBC, but you can't do anything till next Sunday anyway. So I guess you've just kind of got to see how it all shakes out. Oftentimes, again, I'm not super up to date on this news. I wasn't really in on Johnny Brito, but sometimes it's just, they want a reliever in for a potential off day, right? And he will get the call the next time. I would assume they need a starter, which, given the state of that Yankees rotation, guys dropping left and right, Clark Schmidt was shaky his first start a little bit. I would assume his chance will come sooner rather than later. That's typically the way it goes with these guys who are on the cusp, these starting pitchers who are on the cusp of the major league roster, especially after that really, honestly, looking at the numbers here, really impressive first performance, 20% swinging strike rate, 71% first pitch strike rate, pounded the zone, got chases outside of the zone. The results were good. I would imagine he'll be back relatively soon for the Yankees. And honestly, maybe a guy kind of missed the boat on it. Wasn't really in on Johnny Brito prior to that start in DFS or otherwise, but really impressive first start. So I'll have to do a little bit more digging on him, maybe before next Sunday or before whenever his next start is.
Yeah, it's a really just unfortunate circumstance, right? Bad timing. You see an awesome outing. You mentioned some of the metrics there. He also had a 29.4% strikeout minus walk rate. Everything just looked really good for him. So I'm kind of sitting back at my desk like Mr. Burns, hoping, he gets cut this next week because he doesn't make a start. And then maybe there's some potential news shortly after that kind of has him in line, or you can kind of figure out when he will get called up for another start and maybe you can get him on the cheap. Let's see. I don't know if I have the exact high bid on him, but I was seeing the bids anywhere from, 3 to 20+%. So there was some bids north of $200 placed on Brito. So
it seems a little aggressive, even if he did have the job, but that's just me. I don't
know. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And we're going to be getting into some more fab bids. I should have probably used Brito as the segue, but I want to, actually we can segue into fab because Will Smith was kind of part of that as well. I added him to the news and notes, but he's part of the fab as well. So we'll just kind of drop down to that. Will Smith gets the first save for Texas, comes into the ninth inning, shuts the door down on the Phillies. For the most part, the consensus, I would say, was thinking it was Jose Leclerc. They brought in Will Smith late in spring training. Leclerc has 100% owner percentage and hasn't gotten any work, or has he? He's gotten one inning of work, one hit allowed, one strikeout, and a walk. So Will Smith gets the job. I've kind of liked him in the past. He's had experience with Milwaukee, San Francisco, Atlanta. Did you get any Will Smith? If not, just what are your thoughts in general with the team landscape, him getting the first shot, Bochy's the manager, where are you at?
I suppose it's possible he holds a job. I've been kind of out on him for the last 2 or 3 years, even that last, not last year, but the year before last, 2021 in Atlanta, when he did get a bunch of saves, thought he was pretty fortunate to get as many as he did. Gives up a ton of fly balls. not getting any younger, obviously. And honestly, my strategy this year in general, I pretty much punted closer entirely. Went with very, very heavy volume starting pitcher approach early, mostly cheap guys. I think I have 8 fab leagues and led my league in innings in all 8. Streaming starting pitchers. It went pretty well in general. Theory behind that, just briefly, there's just lower run scoring in April. I mean, not necessarily this year, but it still will be lower relative to when we get to the hot summer months. I wanted to, you know, pile up the innings, wins, and strikeouts while ratios are lower in general. And then, in OCs, which are 12-team leagues, like, I never have any trouble finding closers on the waiver wire throughout the year. I think, I mean, just, you know, it's like every single fab period, including last night. What is there? I mean, there's like 2, 3, 4 guys you can speculate, bid on. I like to try to get out in front of it, you know, see a faltering closer who hasn't lost his bid yet. And then get, you know, an elite reliever who can kind of roll into it. Last year, I think I ended up with Clay Holmes for a buck or two on all my teams. Just kind of seeing seeing Aroldis Chapman. You could just see him blowing up. So even before it kind of happened. So things like that. I really wasn't in on Will Smith, though. I just think there'll be better opportunities. He did go for a little bit too much. I did have some, you know, kind of keep him honest bids that didn't end up going through. I don't think it's bad, but I do think – we saw like opening day, some pitchers get some closers get saves, and people assume just because they got the first save, they're going to be the guy the rest of the year. Someone has to get the first save, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that they're the guy. They're going to get 40 saves. Like you see, oh, this team has had one. So he's got 100% of his team saves. Oh, he's going to get them all. I don't think that's going to be the case for Will Smith, especially being a lefty. And frankly, for a lot of these guys, I think a lot of people are assuming they've got, you know, a shutdown all year closer early on. We see how much turnover there is with these guys, and that's not going to change anytime soon. So I was kind of out on him, but I do get why people were in on Will Smith here.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the year, especially in the first series, it's interesting to see just bullpen usage and work, because sometimes you can have a team that has, let's just call it an Edwin Diaz who isn't around, right? But the most surefire closer, Emmanuel Clase, and through the first or second game, if there's not a close or even a high leverage situation, these guys are still going to come in and get some work at some point. You can't really predict the outcome of each game, and these managers still want to get in their studs at some point in the early part of the season, even if there isn't a 3, you know, run or less, you know, game that's going on. And so with the Rangers in the second game, they won 16-3. And then on opening day, I think it was the Phillies that won. The Rangers ended up winning 11-7 in that shootout with DeGrom and Nola. So Sunday was the first time that they actually had a close game to even go to, and Leclerc worked the day before. So maybe early on, they didn't want to go with a back-to-back, but they wanted to get Leclerc some work in the second. So you do have to tread with a little bit of caution. I did have some keep him honest bids in on Will Smith as well, but mine were anywhere from 2-3%. So I missed out on him as well. Let's move on to Brett Beatty. Is it Beatty or Batty? It's Beatty, right?
I think so.
Okay. So he's still in the minor leagues. He was drafted in a good amount of main events, and then he was cut after the news shortly after that he was going to be starting the season in the minor leagues. And now he's starting to get picked back up. I noticed, I don't have the full scrape of data, but I did notice bids from the 5-10% range on him. He is still currently in the minor leagues. Do you have an estimated return for, or an arrival, I should say, for Beatty? Were you in on putting on the bids for the minor leagues? Do you like to hold minor leaguers? Lots of loaded questions here for Brett Beatty. Where are you at on the potential third baseman for the New York Mets?
Yeah, I wasn't in on him. It's basically a matter of him taking Eduardo Escobar's job, I believe, for the Mets, which you would think would happen soon. I mean, they're Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, is aggressive. He's not going to let – it seems like he can also ultimately make the call, right? If he wants this guy up, he's probably coming up. One of my things this year, and I'm going to try to maintain this throughout the year as best I can, I'm not super interested in most players who don't steal bases at all. We've obviously seen just players running wild. But one thing I was trying to do was avoid players that really don't run at all, because you can't you just don't have the chance to pop off on stolen bases if you're not really able to run. Now, he does have like a, you know, two stolen bases, but last year in double A, you know, 2 for 5 on the base pass. So that's not going to be a part of his game. I see, you know, 25, 26% strikeout rates. Looks like good, but not huge power, at least in terms of the results. I know the, you know, the scouting report maybe says differently. So, and a player who's not up yet. So I see, you know, main event's different, right? That's 15 team leagues. I'm in mostly 12s. But I don't necessarily see a huge impact bat here. It's also left-handed. I think could be platoon potentially, even if he does come up. I just see a lot of holes here. And I was pretty conservative this first fab period. It's just everybody's chomping at the bit, right? It's the first fab period after the season. Everybody wants to get in there. We've seen it. We've been playing NFBC enough years where the bids start to dwindle off relatively quickly. So, yeah, I wasn't really in on him, especially in 12s. I get it in 15s, but yeah, I just don't see him making a huge difference. So not a guy that I would want to hold while he's still in the minor leagues.
You also mentioned the handedness for him being a lefty that could cause some platoon splits. And then when he comes into the lineup,
he's going to be at the bottom. I mean,
yeah, that's the simple thing that I kind of, because I'm not the sharpest dude when it comes to minor leaguers. And I've said that time and time and again, but where's he going to hit, right? Like little things like that for me will help nudge. And then the no speed, I have 41% shares of Yoan Moncada, and people are like, why did you buy back in? And it wasn't necessarily, well, I think he's better than Justin Turner and Anthony Rendon, because he was kind of going in that pocket if you were either punting third base or looking for a super cheap corner infielder. And for me, I wasn't in on the early third baseman, so I kept falling into that area, and I would just push Yoan Moncada up. And it wasn't because of the batting skills necessarily versus Rendon or Turner, but it was age. And then it was he could potentially chip in just a little bit more than these other two guys. And with this new landscape, I definitely didn't want any part of a Turner or Rendon that are just not going to run whatsoever. And I think Moncada will potentially at least chip in just a tiny, tiny bit there due to the youth and somewhat of the speed. And fuck, he's healthy right now and he does look good. So
yeah, he's had a strange career coming off that 2019 season when he went 25 home runs, 10 steals, hit 315. Then he had COVID, and then that turned into long COVID, right, for him, and kind of had a couple of down years. He wasn't even, I thought he was worse than he was in 2021. Not a lot of fantasy juice in that season, but wasn't horrible as a real life hitter. But yeah, it would be fun to see him back. And he's one of those guys, right? You can't really project many steals for him, but like he does have it in his history. He's still young. And those are the types of players where I think a few of those guys that are projected for like 3, 4, 5 steals are going to pop up for 15. He seems like one who could potentially at least do it.
Yeah. And you can see his demeanor on the field right now. He's got the chip on his shoulder and he's wanting to prove that he can stay healthy, because the local broadcast here in Chicago and the beat reporters have started to, you know, kind of point it out. Yeah. It's not just the COVID anymore. It's the lower body, you know, issues and the ligaments, et cetera, that have kind of harnessed him. But he had said time and time again this offseason, coming into the winter, going into the WBC, we saw him tear the cover off the ball in the WBC, playing really, really good defense at third base. And then right before some of the main events, he, you know, gets pulled from a spring game with a back stiffness or tightness, and people start to freak out again. But he seems to be doing good so far. All right, we got to keep rolling on. So Logan Ohapi was the big catcher to add. I saw some 20%+ bids. Tyler McGill was the big starting pitcher to add. Anywhere from 3 to 25%+ is what I saw sifting through. And then two other closers, Danny Jimenez and Pierce Johnson. We saw Danny Jimenez 3 to 36%, Pierce Johnson 5 to 25%+. Some people were stashing Liam Hendricks, so I saw some sub 1% bids, meaning a single digit bid. And then anywhere up to 40%+ for Liam Hendricks. That's a $400, 40% of your bids, or your budget, I should say. So Hendricks, Jimenez, Pierce Johnson, any interest with those three guys? And then I'll ask you about McGill and Ohapi. We'll get back to them. But where are you at on these three closers and those ranges?
Kind of out on
all over range. The place.
Yeah, kind of out on those three guys, honestly, at those ranges. Obviously, huge rate. I had Danny Jimenez last year. He was the closer for the A's for, I don't know, a few weeks. Really wasn't impressed with him as a pitcher. And now his velocity, I think, is down like 2 or 3 miles per hour on all of his pitches. I know he got the first save. I think he's going to struggle. Like, even if he is the closer, which I'm not 100% sure that he's actually going to be the guy. So that's one question. How many opportunities are the A's really going to get? I mean, they're an absolutely awful team. That's question two. And then I have serious concerns about his ability to pitch well. Again, I kind of have a little bit of a different approach to trying to get these closers, where I don't really want the super crappy guys to speculate on the super who I view as not good pitchers, because they're going to lose a job. They're going to get blown up. I know some people just chase the number, the saves, and kind of throw out stats for relief pitchers, for closers. I have a little bit of a different approach. So I wasn't in on Jimenez. Pierce Johnson, I mean, he's like a 32-year-old reliever with like 130 career innings. For the Rockies, again, we don't know by any means that this is just his job. I mean, I saw Daniel Bard, you know, has some mental stuff going on, but I saw he's back throwing already. He could be back. Spending 15% of your budget on Pierce Johnson seems wildly irresponsible to me. And I'm a pretty irresponsible guy in general, so I didn't get the Pierce Johnson love. And Hendricks, I was in on a little bit. I mean, who knows how long he's going to take, but it does seem like it could potentially be like out of nowhere, right? Where all of a sudden it's like Liam Hendricks is going to be back in a week or something. I mean, I don't really know exactly what's going on with the recovery. What is it? Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I think it is for him. Not a doctor, but he's been throwing, it seems like. And I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if they're just like all of a sudden, yeah, Hendricks is, you know, gone to minor league camp and they'll call him up when ready. And it seems like for a guy like him, that could be relatively soon, right? Like, again, I don't know exactly what the treatment entails and all that stuff, but who knows? I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he came back and just was kind of his normal self, and he turned out to be one of the, I think, potentially like best pickups of the year. I think that's the upside for Hendricks. I don't see anywhere near that upside for guys like Jimenez and Pierce Johnson.
Yeah, if I had a spot to stash and Liam Hendricks was available, I would certainly go to add him, because he's much more of a known, albeit that he doesn't have a timetable to return. But when he does return, we would have to assume, right, that the skills are still intact if he's healthy enough to return. And if the skills are intact, the job is surely going to be secure. I'm all about that Reynaldo Lopez life. But outside of him and seeing where that bullpen is for the White Sox, they would definitely want to move Reynaldo Lopez down a bump to have him as their HLR and just have Liam Hendricks close down the ninth. So if you do have room to stash, I certainly would do that. Liam Hendricks is 69% ownership percentage in the NFBC online championship. And he was still available in about 10% of the main event leagues, but he is now at 100%. So that window of opportunity has closed. Tyler McGill up to 3 to 25% bid, starting pitcher for the New York Mets. Yay or nay on that?
I had just different starting pitchers higher on my list, including a bunch of these two-step guys that we're going to talk about, I think, okay, here in a few minutes. So yeah, I wasn't in on Tyler McGill. I mean, I just don't necessarily think he's much of a better pitcher or a better bet than some of the guys getting two starts this week. He was more expensive than all of them. I was a little confused as why everyone was so high on Tyler McGill. He hasn't really been that great, honestly. You know, even when he's pitched, and yeah, I was pretty lukewarm on Tyler McGill, honestly.
So two steps, that'll be the last little pool of players we talk about here. It's Zach Plesac, Michael Grove, and Yusei Kikuchi. I mentioned Yusei Kikuchi just because he was available a little bit more, obviously, in the online championships, but I added him in one of my main event leagues for $69 with a runner up of 44. I didn't add him necessarily because of the two-step, though. The two-step is nice, but it was just because of the strikeout stuff and what we saw from in the spring. I know that the walk rate is still a concern, but I did want to mention him if he was available, or if he is available, to kind of monitor him, because there is some strikeout upside there. But the two that were available in the main events were Zach Plesac against He's going to be on the road at Oakland and then versus Seattle when he pitches at home. And then Michael Grove, who is taking the place of Ryan Pepiot for the Los Angeles Dodgers, costs a little bit more than Plesac. Saw his range from anywhere from 3% up to triple digits of $100 or more for Michael Grove. The interesting note, though, for Michael Grove is the sustainability factor here. Tony Gonsolin has already moved on from bullpens to facing live hitters. There's reports that he could potentially return this month if and when that does happen. Being a Dodgers fan, I will state that Tony Gonsolin will take Michael Grove's spot. I'm not going to speculate there. Gonsolin will be up. Grove will be down. So it does look like a short-term rental as of now. We never know. Health can always take a turn for any pitcher, even Gonsolin, who's still coming back. But between the two, Plesac, Grove, including the price and the matchups, where were you at on these guys?
Yeah, well, I've sworn off Plesac for life. I can't be following Dr. Dave down the Plesac street. So he's just the guy that I just not allowed to roster personally. But I was in on Grove and Kikuchi both. I think kind of risky starts. Kikuchi more so than Grove, but yeah, Kikuchi gets what at KC, who did not score a single run, I believe, in three games against the Twins. So that seems like a pretty good matchup. And then he gets at the Angels, which is definitely scary for a lefty with their lineup. But I think he led all of spring training in strikeouts or strikeout rate, something like that. I mean, he was mowing guys down. Yes, the walks were still there, but he's always been a talented dude. And I don't know. I don't think it's beyond the possibility that he could figure it out and be a big asset. Like I said, a lot of my strategy this year early on is to really attack pitching early, try to get as many innings as I can, strikeouts, wins, all that stuff. So I was in on Kikuchi, got him in a bunch of leagues. Got Michael Grove in a bunch of leagues too. You mentioned, Gonsolin will come back and take his job. I mean, if Grove has 2, 3, 4 good starts, like we see it with pitching with all these teams. I mean, players get hurt, players need time off. Like if you're pitching well, you usually get to stay in the rotation for the most part. I mean, who knows? Gonsolin could have a setback. So many things could happen where Grove gets to keep pitching if he's going well. I think we talked, both of us, I had a ton of Pepiot on my team. So he was, I thought, really easy cut, right? I mean, I didn't really even mm-hmm. think twice about that one. I also had picked up JT Brubaker, was scheduled for a 2-start in week 2. He was a guy I had, you know, just as like my last pick in OCs and stuff. He was obviously an easy cut too. So I did have a couple spots to stream some pitchers. And my team is loaded up with a lot of these guys right now and a couple more too. Anthony Desclafani, I think, is going to get 2 starts this week for San Francisco. He's at the White Sox today, and then he also gets KC probably on Sunday. And then Cutter Crawford for the Red Sox gets, I think it's Pittsburgh and then Detroit. Now, neither of those guys are, of course, guaranteed that second start later in the week, but I do have some faith in both guys as pitchers. So, yeah, I've got a lot of cheap pitchers going today. I was looking at DFS stuff, and it's like all these pitchers that I have going are like the cheapest pitchers available on DraftKings. So I'll probably be rostering them over there too. And it could potentially be a rough Monday night for your boy DC over here. Might have to make sure I've got some alcohol on hand in case things really go south.
I'll try my hardest not to guess all of the pitchers. And if any of them are in the terrible outing tweets, I will not tag you.
I think I'm going to have at least one with blood on my hands. That's for sure.
Oh, man. Yeah, so Cutter Crawford, he was getting popular in some of the main events. He was added in a bunch of main events. Now he's up to 94%. So his current start percentage, even though people are still messing with that, it's at 89%. I would assume that that's probably going to get bumped all the way up. Is there anything else? How about, is there any props that you've looked at or any just run lines or anything like that today in the betting world for MLB that you are confident on?
Yeah, haven't gotten to props yet. I kind of start my research with the DFS stuff and then go from there. But yeah, if you're on DraftKings, you know, looking at the kind of the cheaper guys, cheapest starting pitcher today, Michael Grove, 5,600 against Colorado. Second cheapest, Cutter Crawford against Pittsburgh at 5,800. I didn't mention Jake Woodford. I'm going to roll him out in a couple weeks.
Oh, boy.
He gets the Braves. That's one I'm real nervous about, but I actually like him as a pitcher a little bit. But that's one where I might be kicking myself a little bit. But he's cheap. Bradish, Matthew Boyd is down here. So, yeah, it'll probably be a day where I'm spending up for some bats, going cheaper at starting pitcher for DFS, which is a fun way to play until it's not, until you've got some big negative scores in your starting pitcher spots. But, yeah, I'll get to the props certainly later. But it does look like a day where I'll be maybe a little bit contrarian in DFS, which is where I like to be in general.
You, as always, stay on brand, my man. I'll give one prop, and it's an easy one, chalky probably, but it's still only over 4.5 strikeouts, and that's Drew Rasmussen against the Washington Nationals. So,
sign me up. I'll be tailing you on that one.
Yeah, do that, and you can even just pound the money line on the Rays there, or even the -105, and get yourself a little bit extra on that. So thank you so much for joining me. It's great to see your face. You and I are on StreamYard or Zooming or whatever the hell you want to call it. Always good to see you. Always good to hang out. I appreciate you coming on and giving me your time and the listeners your time. So thank you so much. And as always, you and I will keep in touch via text message. And until next time, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.